Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift in antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we are here to prove it. We are here to help you identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. My name is Brandon. I'm here with my good friend, Matt, and we're going to talk to you about selling stuff. Hey, Matt, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
You know, it has been a day. It has been a couple of days.
It's,
been
it's early, too.
I know. Whatever. But it's life and, you know, been crushing it. So hopefully you have had a busy week of finding treasures.
I have had a very busy week. It has been a very good sales week, which is weird because March is typically either the worst or one of two of the lowest months of the year in the cycles that I have come to see. And I had about a week and a half where I didn't have any sales. And I was like, well, you know, I was prepared for it. I was ready. And then I'm telling you, today is what? Thursday when we're recording this. But from Friday of last week until today, I've done something like, I'm approaching $9,000 in sales.
Really?
In like 5 or 6 days. Now, I'm not bragging, because what'll happen is the next 3 weeks I'll sell nothing. And then it all comes out in the wash, right?
Yes.
But it was like when it rains, it pours, and it really did this time. It was really strange, but exciting as well.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, just in general. I know people listen to this podcast, they want to learn some tricks about how to do this, but if they're starting out, I have a friend that's actually following the Rusty the Reseller. He kind of discovered you independently, and one of the things that I think that everybody that does this, of any kind, any business, is to pay attention to the fact that you do not want to, like, you want to plan for the worst and hope for the best, in a sense of budgeting. Like, as you do your business, you know, if you have a huge week, don't go out and buy yourself a new car. Sit on that. And then think about it as a long arc trajectory. I like that you said that. Like, it'll all come out in the wash. And it generally does. You might continue to get better, but I find that the more conservative you are, the better off you're going to be if you're trying to start a business. So if you're selling stuff and you have a huge week, don't go out and buy a new farm. You know, sit on it and wait, because you don't know what's going to happen in the downtime.
That's true. I would say the only rebuttal to that would be, if you're buying something that's an investment,
sure,
you're using that money to save because you think you can make money on something, then that might be the only thing. But you're absolutely right. You have to put money aside for rainy days, for the months when you know are going to be slow. And maybe this is not the month, right? It has to be in the past. Maybe it's next month.
Right.
But I know it's coming, and so I need to be prepared for that. That was one of the hardest things for me starting out, because I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have capital. I was just starting with whatever I had, which was very little. And it's difficult to save, because for a long period of time, I was just reinvesting everything that I could to maintain and continue to grow the business. And now I'm at a point where I'm still trying to grow it, but I'm also, like, one of my strategies is I have some categories of items that I know sell really well, really quickly for good money. And if I don't need that money immediately, I know they're not going to go down in value. I will sort of kind of put some collections together of things as sort of like an in case. So if it's a low month, I'm like, well, I've got this set of, you know, Halloween postcards, or I've got these action figures, Star Wars action figures from, you know, 77 to 83 that always sell well. And so they're there. I can sell them at any time. And I kind of wait for optimal times, or if I'm in a place where I know I need the money. But everyone has their own strategies for that. Nothing's better than just keeping cash back. If you're able to do that and you don't, you know, it's not going to burn a hole in the pocket. And like you said, you're not going to go out and buy a car, then great, do that. But it's nice to have things. If there's another COVID situation and I'm all of a sudden have to be at home for 6 months and I can't source, mm-hmm. I'm okay. That was one of the things I did early on, was I'm not going to let this situation happen to me again. I have enough inventory. I can work for probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years, without ever having to leave my home. That's how much inventory I have at this point. So that's not going to happen. I mean, something else might happen.
Yeah. But let me clarify what I was going to say. You made up a really good point, is that there is a huge difference between investing in your company, you're buying, you're rebuying or whatever. Like, so for instance, if you take that money, you say, well, it's going to be a hit on me this week, and I don't know what's going to happen next week, but I think this is worth $500 because I think I could sell it for $3,000. It might take 6 months, but it's just like an investment in anything else. I'm really talking about just being like, oh, wow, we're really doing well. Let's
blow out
every
money.
Night.
It's blowing it.
And, yep. You know, it's like, I always feel like that's probably a good motto for life is splurge when you actually can. And don't splurge when you can. So I think there's an absolutely important differentiation between investment and paying yourself. That's really what I mean.
It is kind of, you know, it's a little ironic that I do what I do because I don't collect things and I don't really have, there's not a lot of value in tangible items to me that don't have purpose. So like musical instruments have value to me because I get enjoyment and pleasure from playing those instruments or repairing those instruments, that kind of thing. So, but if I have extra money, I'm much more likely to use it on something that is experiential, that's mm-hmm. perishable. I'm going to go on a trip. When that trip's over, the trip's over. I have the memories and I enjoyed it, but there's nothing left of it. But whenever I'm buying something, I have extra money, let's say, and I'm like, how do I want to invest this? I could buy it in something to sell quickly, or I could buy it like an instrument. I'm starting to slowly acquire these pretty valuable vintage instruments. I'm enjoying them, but I could play it for 10 or 20 years. And when I sell it, I'm going to make money on mm-hmm. it. I got the enjoyment and it's a non-perishable item, which will retain or grow up in value. And so, but you're absolutely right. You got to be careful. You can't blow your money. People who do that, I think the two main reasons why people who attempt to do what I do full-time, like I do it, and don't succeed is either because they don't have the discipline to do all of the work. They like the fun part, mm-hmm. and they don't let themselves do the hard part, which is the listing it, researching it, and all of that. They get it, and then they just sort of keep it. So you can't make money if you do that. The other reason is they're not planning with their money ahead of time for those difficult months. They just kind of operate as normal. They're not looking to the future. And then, oops, we have, oh no, two bad months in a row. Wasn't expecting that. I didn't even know I would have the one yet. And then all of a sudden their cash is depleted. They're rich with inventory, low on cash. And I can also tell you that in my experience, that's when the best deals pop up too. It's when you don't have the money. Right. Or when you shouldn't spend the money and you have to make a really tough decision. Like, oh, do I overextend or do I not?
Yeah, and it's always, I think, good as a business owner to have a way you want to word this, but have a line of credit. And I don't mean to say like take a loan or whatever, but
sure.
Give yourself a line of credit. Say, hey, if I want this and I know it's really valuable, I need to make sure that I have somewhere I have enough money or capital to be able to get the thing that I need. So it's all part of that business calculus that we talk about. And I think that's one of the things I really like about talking with you is that sort of getting this, you're talking about reselling and it's super interesting, but these are kind of universal ideas. If you're, buying a grocery store or a corner market or whatever you're doing, having these as just sort of general business mantras are really helpful.
Yeah, I think so. And I still have a lot to learn. I'm certainly not an authority on necessarily running a business. I'm good at the details of what I do, but it's a much larger picture than that, right? When it has to do with money and planning and all of that. So I'm getting better. I'm much better today than I was 4 years ago when I started this full time.
Yeah.
But I got a ways to go. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit, if this is an okay segue, today about vinyl music, vinyl records as a thing for buying and selling. Now, do you, Brandon, have a record player? What's your history with vinyl?
It's funny. I have a really good friend and we were just talking about this very subject. Again, I always say this disclaimer, people are like, oh, right, dude. But we don't really talk about what we're going to talk about. You just sort of launch and it's fun. But literally last week I was talking to a friend and he was saying, you know, all these people that are getting vinyl, I don't have a record player, but I've been thinking about buying a record player. And he was like, well, you know, he's not an audiophile at all. I love music. You love music. My whole life is filled with music. We have music on all the time at my house.
Awesome.
You know, I use streaming service. I use Spotify primarily, but I also use Apple, whatever. I just introduced my daughter to the great Hank Williams Sr. And she was like, oh, Daddy, this sounds really old fashioned. And I said, well, it was recorded 85 years ago, so it does sound different. But one of the reasons why I'm thinking about getting vinyl for anyone that's listening is that the audio, the sound of vinyl is very different than digital audio. And that's I won't bore everybody with the facts on that, but I don't. So the answer to your question is no, but yes, I want to.
Yeah. Well, It's, I also love music, and we talk about this probably a little bit every episode, but it's funny, there are certain categories of items out there that I tend to stay away from.
Huh.
And vinyl records for buying and selling is one of them. Now, I'm about to give you an example of me going against what I typically do.
Swimming upstream.
Because it's a rabbit, it's a deep rabbit hole you can go down with vinyl records as far as condition, grading things, certain, you know, what pressing, is it original pressing, is it a repress, is it high fidelity, what is it?
Yikes.
Right? And so the people who buy and who collect vinyl records are quite picky, would be one word, but that kind of has a negative connotation to it. They're very particular about what they're wanting and what their expectations are for grading of something needs to match what you have listed when you're going to sell a thing. And because that takes a lot of research and a lot of time to kind of build up a knowledge base on that, I've sort of avoided it because there are other things that are just as readily available, cheap, that don't require as much work on my part, and time is money, right? So
right.
I don't do that a lot. However, here's the story of what happened this last week. I go to yard sales, estate sales, auctions weekly. There's a few in the area that I live that happen bi-monthly. So I was at an auction, and this is one of the only ones in the area, which it's an old school auction. You've got an auctioneer. He gets up, he stands there, he talks really fast, and they've got all kinds of things that they sell. They start at a certain time. They end whenever everything's sold. You don't know what order things are going to be sold in, any of that. But one of the really cool things about this place is that I have the opportunity to come the day early in the day before they do it. And if I can't be there, I can leave absentee bids, which essentially means I take a piece of paper, I walk around to all the different lots. If I see something I would be willing to bid on, I put down the lot number, a brief description of it, and the price, that the max price I would pay. So when the actual auction is happening, I'm at home with my kids having a nice Friday evening, the auctioneer is going off. If nobody bids above my max bid, I will end up winning that item, and then I come the next day or two to pay and collect the items.
Can I interrupt you just really quickly?
Of course.
Point of clarification. So, like, this is, I used to go to the stockyard auction with my dad when I was a kid, and it was the whole, like, awesome. Hey, damn, man, I just sold, right? Yes. The guy's talking really fast, like, wait, what happened? When you do that, though, one of the reasons why people go to auctions is they trying to maybe go against another person. When you give that max bid, mm-hmm. you ultimately are on the line for that max bid, correct?
No, you're on the hook for wherever it ends within yours.
Oh,
so here's an example,
okay.
let's say an item, I'm thinking, I run the numbers in my head based mm-hmm. on what I think I can sell it for and what makes sense for me to pay versus what I think I can make profit on it. And I say, I wouldn't spend more than blank, but if I, like $100, if I spend $100 on it, I'm still good. But the reason I like it is A, I don't have to be there, so I'm not mm-hmm. using my time, and B, there's no way I'm going to get caught up in any sort of emotional situation where I'm trying to, and this is kind of what they want. They want people to buy and outbid one another. I have a hard stop and I don't have to be there. I'm not going to feel motivated in some sort of emotional moment to go over what I know I should go over in price. So this particular one I was at, there was someone's large vinyl record collection. And when I say large, I mean 12 or 13 boxes, and each box had between 100 and 120 records in it. So we're talking a 12 to 1400 vinyl album collection.
Wow.
They were boxed up. There were, like I said, 12 or 13 boxes. I'm looking at them thinking, okay, I've sold these at an antique store locally. Usually on the low end, I'm still getting $5 or $6 or $8. On the high end, $20 or $30, depending on the particular album. So I said to myself, I would pay $100 a box. I would pay a dollar a piece, because even if I went out and sold them for $2 and doubled my money, that's easy, right? And there's always the chance that you're going to find something more valuable. I didn't even really look through it that much. I was just like, well, they look like they're in okay. I looked at a couple. The condition of the vinyl themselves was pretty good. The covers weren't great, but that doesn't matter if a person's really wanting to listen to it. All that said, I put bids on all 12 or 13 boxes, and I end up winning 10 of them. And I didn't pay $100. I paid $60 a box. So I was in about 50 to 60 cents per record. But I spent $600 plus taxes. And so right over here, I'm not able to show you this for the video version, but there will be photos available on our website so you can see what 11 or 1200 vinyl albums look like when they're all sitting out together.
Yeah.
And so I have those. And I've started sorting through them. Kind of my game plan at this point is I'm going to pull, it's going to take some time, right, to go through and research. I'm going to pull 20 or 30 of these things, which I think I can get my investment back on. Hmm. It may need to be more than that, 40 or 50 of them. I'll research them. I'll definitely try to grade the album and the cover, which is, by the way, if you're going to sell albums, there's a grading system, kind of an agreed upon way of grading things. And there's a separate one for the cover itself that it's in, and then one for the vinyl record itself. You could have a pristine cover and a really dinged up, scratched album, and vice versa. So I'm going to get these out. I'm going to try to sell them. Whatever is remaining, I will probably sell at my local spots that I sell at for anywhere from $3 to $5 or a little bit more. And I stand to make $1,000, $1,500 off of that. That will take months to do, but if I get all my money back initially, then I'm not sweating it anymore because my money's back to me. So I'm going to show you a couple of things. Just I have a couple here I just want to show as examples of things that ended up being in this lot because I've already gone through all of them. The first one up here is a small, this would technically be, you know, this is a 45. So 33 is the normal size albums, and then there are smaller ones. This is the Beatles. It says, "Baby, It's You." It's in mono. What the crazy thing about this is, there wasn't just this one. There were 8 identical ones like this. And it looks old, but when you turn it over on the bottom, it actually says that it was produced in 1995. So this is a repressing of this old original set of music. These are selling for between $10 and $12 a piece on eBay. And what's great about duplicate items is that you can make one listing and just put a quantity of 8. So I don't have to make 8 different listings. I make one listing. And so one of these has already sold. So first sale, one of these, it was like $11. Okay, I paid $600. It's going to take a while to get this, but I have 8 of these. So, you know, I'm going to get $80, let's say, back right. from just these. I also, and this will be one of the bigger sellers, came across somewhere between 25 and 30 Elvis albums. I just pulled up a couple
That's
here.
That's the Vegas years right there, buddy.
Yeah, Almost in Love is this title. I got lucky. I grabbed these just because, I mean, look at this.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a quintessential, amazing. You know, and again, you're right. This is like the Vegas, this is sort of the, you know, the 70s. This is, or maybe even early 80s. I can't remember when he
this was the late,
away.
But. That was the late 60s right there. That was the Vegas year.
Okay.
He died in 77, so.
In 77. Okay. Well, you know Elvis.
Man. My mom loved Elvis.
Well, I may have to have you take a look at some of these before I part with them.
Absolutely.
The point is like...
Hey, before you go into that Elvis part, though, I think it's important to clarify to people, because you and I are old codgers, but for the youngsters that are listening, when one used to be, we didn't have singles released per se, like we think about it on the radio today, or they would release a single, and when they released it, they released it in a 45. So on the they were called the B-sides or the A-sides. So the A-side was like the released of the song that was out. And on the backside were oftentimes songs that a lot of people didn't know. So it's just, I just think when people are thinking about whether you've done vinyl or not, that's an important, there's a huge difference between a 45 and a 33.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there is a market for all of them there. In fact, go on sometime on eBay, look up vintage 45 or whatever, you will find that there are titles. And I'm not just talking like obscure Beatles or groups that you already know, like, oh, of course, like if it's an obscure one, it's by them. There's a huge collector base. I'm talking stuff you've never heard of. One genre of music is called Northern Soul music. And for whatever reason, there is a very serious collector group for these types of obscure titles of 45s that came out like in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And single 45s selling in the thousands, $2,000 to $3,000 for one thing. And these are the kinds of things, because they're so obscure, that you could have been out where I just bought these. I mean, you could find these. Now, if you're looking for specific titles, it could be very, very difficult. And this is, again, why I don't really get into this, because it's such a rabbit hole. There's so much out there I don't know about, and it would take a lot. So I'm okay, though, if I'm in 50 cents on an album, because I can go down the block, I can sell on Facebook Marketplace these for $1 a piece and double my money without any effort really at all. But if I want to maximize my money, I do the research, I spend the time, right? The more time you spend or the more time you allow a thing to sit, you're going to eventually get the buyer at the price that you want. But who knows? Tomorrow I may wake up and say, you know what? I'm tired of these being on my floor. Like, I'm just going to throw them up and see if somebody will double my money and come pick them up.
Yeah.
But I like that because I have options.
Nice. So sorry, I interrupted you, but you were about ready to give a big reveal. So what you got those Beatles albums, the 45s, and then
yep.
What else happened?
I got all the records, essentially. And I this was just to say, there is a huge collector base for vinyl records for buying and selling. I don't do it a whole lot, but there are lots out there. People are coming to the antique stores and buying them from me for $5, $6, $8, $20, $30 in some cases. So you can go out to Goodwill and find stuff that you pay $1.50 for and you can sell it for $20 if it's the right title. Now, you need to do your research, but like this was great because I got a bunch of Elvis records. Elvis is still highly collectible. There are Elvis records that are selling for hundreds, if not low thousands of dollars on eBay today. I don't think I got any $1,000 records. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a gamble. It's not a gamble in the sense that I'm not going to make my money back, but it was a gamble because you might, get a lottery ticket in a lot like this.
Yeah, and you've talked about this a lot, but so my dad was the reason why I love music so much is my dad and my mom were huge audiophiles. My dad had 1,000 record collection easily, and it was
nice.
Like one of those rooms, those hippie rooms with its all up on the wall and everything. And when he died, those records, I think my brother just kind of sold them somewhere. But I was, as you're saying this, I know for absolute certainty that he had a first printing, because I know he bought it in the record store when it first came out, which was Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and Paul McCartney and the Wings' Venus and Mars. And they were in mint condition. I didn't even think about the fact that there's a guy named Matt out there that's probably going to be buying these things and sell them on eBay. I don't know. My brother might have kept them for all I know. But the reason I bring that up is you don't know if somebody that's out there, your uncle, your aunt, or whatever, had these big vinyl collections that maybe the whole collection itself isn't great, but there might be one or two of these that are really valuable.
Oh, absolutely. My dad is the same way. I mean, I grew up listening to my dad. My parents were big into, 70s kind of era rock was on all the time in the car.
Foghat, baby, Foghat.
he was more of like, what was he into? He was kind of more of a Boston.
Oh, please say Poco. Please say Poco.
Oh, well, Toto.
Yeah.
We got some.
I gotcha.
So anyhow, I grew up around it. It's cool. I have a turntable. I probably have 100 and some albums personally that I've got. I'm trying to get back into getting stuff from like the 90s, essentially, which is when I was in high school, and the stuff that I listened to middle school, high school, and early into college. Those can bring really high values now because that was a time period when vinyl was not as popular, and so not as many were being made. Well, kind of like supply and demand. If there's not a whole lot of supply and then the demand shoots up, the prices go up.
Yeah.
Right? So it's harder to get those, but these some of these old Elvis albums, they didn't make a ton of them either, but he did produce a lot of albums. So there are a lot that were mass produced. But just keep your eyes open. I want to say one more thing about it, and that is just that when you're selling these, there are specific boxes made to sell or to ship vinyl albums. Okay, and so they're flat. I'm just going to show one right here, and we'll make a picture of it. It's flat. They usually open up, and on the inside, they might have a little bit of bubble wrap. They've got a couple of pieces of cardboard that fold over, and they hold it perfectly in there, and then you just fold it over and tape it. And vinyl albums are considered media mail, so it's very cheap. It's like $4, like barely, maybe a little over $4, $4 to $5 at the most to ship something. So they do take up more space than most of the stuff that I buy, which is another reason I don't do it a whole lot. I can store 1,100 brooches or earring pairs in a little Ziploc bag, but to have 1,100 albums, it's taking up 200 square feet of my whatever on my floor space here. So keep that in mind if you're going to go that route. But it's exciting. It's fun. There's some really cool stuff out there. So keep a lookout.
Yeah. And I remember when I worked for a radio station in San Francisco called KUSF. It was a college station. And they had a huge record swap every single year. And I remember thinking, like, these were hardcore collectors. So you would go through, and people would go through each bin, and they would look for finding that one album. And the only reason I bring this up is you might I want to get a turntable. I always wanted to get, like, an all-in-one turntable. I think they're so fun.
Yeah. But
there are people out there that are looking for that one specific album that right now is in your grandparents' attic.
Absolutely.
Like getting an original print of Hank Williams' first album, for some people, that is a big deal. It's like you were saying, you don't collect a lot of stuff. But for people that are collectors, that's a big deal. Especially, music is near and dear to my heart. So I'm like, ooh, I wouldn't mind having that first printing of whatever.
Of course. Well, as we round out here, I'm wondering a couple of things. Number one, Did you have like sort of a disc jockey nickname? And do you have a sign off that,
you know, it's really
that you
funny.
Could give us on your way out?
I did do on air stuff, but I did not have, it was just me. Okay. I did not have a sign off. But one thing that's really interesting, I learned a ton about how people listen to music and listen to the news from that.
Yeah.
It's funny. People have asked me that before. No, I didn't. I wasn't like the, hey, out there in radio land, it's coming at you, the moon dog, you know, yeah. None of that stuff. But that would have been fun. I would have been the moon dog for sure.
Moon dog. That's right.
Anyway, Matt, thank you. So I am literally salivating, thinking to myself, where are those albums that my dad had? So keep us posted on selling those.
I'll look for some Hank Williams.
Yes, if
for
you find that magical album and you sell it for lots and lots of money, you need to come back and tell us about it. So
I will. I've got an update on the next episode for some jewelry stuff for those who are interested.
Nice. All right.
That's coming.
Well, we'll sign off for now. We'll be back with a new episode on Tuesday. This will drop on Thursday. So hopefully everybody remember to subscribe. There's lots of people listening. That's really cool. We love it. Subscribe. Go to the Rusty channel. If you have questions, hit us up at whatsoldpodcast@gmail.com. That's our email. Matt loves to get questions. I will get the questions and I will answer them, but I will lie to you. I will not tell you the truth. So make sure you ask Matt for the question. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Matt, any last words?
No last words. Just good luck out there. Be safe.